Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. I am Susan Bida, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com, a free website devoted to helping caregivers manage elder care. Thank you for tuning in to our last show in August. I can hardly believe that September is right here. We start a whole fall series on Wednesday, September 8th, and we normally conduct our show live on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern. However, since the first Monday in September is Labor Day, the show will be on Wednesday instead for that week only. To listen to any of our past radio shows, visit our website, www.ecarediary.com, under blogs, and click on Blog Talk Radio. Today, we've invited another friend whom I met at Aging in America in Chicago. She has become a friend since then, and she's an accomplished professional in the field of elder care. Dale Carter is here today from South Bend, Indiana. She is an elder care advocate, author, speaker, and coach. Her book, Transitioning Your Aging Parent, A Five-Step Guide Through Crisis and Change, helps adult daughters and sons and families navigate the crises and changes their aging parents will eventually face. Her ADAPT framework provides a clear-cut process for making the right decision, making the change, and along the way, strengthening family relationships. She used this process during her own mother's crisis. Dale is a former educator and project manager and founded TransitionAgingParents.com. Through her weekly radio show, e-courses, articles, and presentations, Dale helps family caregivers respond to the challenges of caregiving, as well as find purpose and fulfillment in what is some of the most important work of their lives. So, Dale, thank you for being on our show today.
Oh, thank you, Susan.
It's wonderful to have you. Dale, your personal story is one that millions of family caregivers can relate to. We all go through this crisis at some point, but I think few of us know how to handle it successfully, and I'd love for you to begin by telling us about what happened with your mother.
Oh, certainly. It was in March of 2008. I got a call from out of the blue, like often happens, from a friend of my mother's, and my mother was in Maryland, and I'm in Indiana, so we were about 600 miles apart, and her friend told me that my mother had been taken to the hospital with what they thought was a stroke, and that she was in really serious condition. So she advised me to start to plan to come out, and she said, I think you're going to have to be here for a very long time. At that point in time, I had no knowledge about health care for the elderly, about living options, even about community resources in my mother's area. So I just felt like I had just been thrown into a dark hole. I didn't know where to turn, really. I kind of pulled myself together and thought, okay, what do I have to address? What issues do I have to address? How am I going to do this? I started making some calls to people I knew in the area and just started to pull a plan together and then drove out to help my mom.
And, you know, Dale, one of the things I think about when people are faced with a crisis, they're either, you know, a couple of reactions. There's the deer in the headlights moment and you're kind of paralyzed as to what to do. And then there are people who really kind of pick up and start taking charge, and not always very successfully, though. So tell us specifically about your professional background and how that helped you address the crisis with your mother and your family so effectively.
Right. In retrospect, I really do believe it was my background as a project manager. I had been taught how to deal with very complex projects and a lot of what they used to call stakeholders. So immediately I understood this was going to be a very big project to help get my mom's health stabilized. And then I also knew that her living condition had really gotten very, very poor through this friend sharing all this with me. So I really understood I had to get a handle on kind of what we call the scope or what the issues were And I couldn't let myself become overwhelmed thinking, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, I've got to do this. So I really kind of got categories of need like health, finance, living. And then I was very careful to understand, who did I have to reach out to? Who would be impacted by my mother's situation, whether it was family, friends, or, her other relatives? And I had to be sure that we really had good open lines of communication. There were a lot of things that were going through my mind, but it was the same type of thing that I had to address whenever I was managing a project at work. So that's what I tried to put into place, use those skills.
And that's so wonderful that you had those skills, because I think most people feel they don't even know what the first steps are to take and to even come up with this method of organizing all the things that need to be done in categories. So you talk about the ADAPT method. Can you tell us what motivated you to develop the ADAPT method and eventually write your book?
Sure. Well, throughout all of this, we had to stabilize my mom's health. My brother had been unreachable for 2 weeks when this all happened. He was on vacation. Mm-hmm. We had to pull him into the mix, which was a challenge for me. We had to go through so many different transitions with my mom before she actually did move to her retirement community and get what we called stabilized.
Sure.
So I realized that, when we got to the other side of it, I thought, okay, we got through this. And I thought, it really worked out well for our family. And was that by luck, or was it by kind of the process I went through? And mm-hmm. then I thought, it really was that process. And I thought, there's got to be lots of adult children that are facing what I am or will be in the future. And so I thought the value that I could bring to other people was to kind of formalize this process and share it in an understandable way so that other people could use my process.
Well, I'm amazed that this book is such a quick and easy read. It took me, I would say, about an hour or less to read, and yet it delivers such crucial information and tips that caregivers really need to address a crisis situation. And oftentimes it is a crisis situation. So thank you very much for that. I'd love for you to explain why the methodology is so key and what type of people can best benefit from it.
Right. I wanted to write this book so that people could use it in time of crisis, which you said you could get through it very quickly, and I'll go through the ADAPT method for listeners. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to put it out there for people who are trying to educate themselves, who are trying to be proactive and say, how can I prepare myself so that when my parent does face a crisis, I know how to respond. And it's not so tough on the family, because this is really, really hard on a family when you're put into a crisis situation like this. I also wanted to put it out there so if any professional caregivers knew about it, they could share with families. So it's really for anyone to educate them and to help them become proactive and prepared.
That's wonderful. So, Dale, could we take this time now so that you could share sort of the ADAPT method and maybe kind of summarize that, and then we can maybe get to the great nuggets in your book.
Sure. So I'll just go over at a high level what the ADAPT method is.
Sure.
And I came up with the word ADAPT. It took me a long time to come up with the right word. But I thought that word ADAPT was so important, because you're transitioning. Your parent is actually, the definition for transition is transforming. And I always think, my parent is moving to a different state. So that word ADAPT was really important, but it actually stands for the five actions within this transition process. The first one is assess. You really need to understand your parents' needs, their values, and their wishes. And you need to understand yourself as well in your own capacity. And then the next two letters kind of go together. It's discuss as a family. And this is a huge part of it. If my brother and our family had not come together in the best interest of my mother, I know the outcome would have been different. And then P is for plan. Planning is really important. I know a lot of times planning kind of just gets pushed by the wayside, but it is a crucial part. In project management, we learned that planning was usually about 60% of the entire project. If you plan properly and have everyone engaged, you have a better chance for a successful outcome. And then T is the transition part, actually helping your parent through the change.
Right. And this is for a group of people. We're talking about families being involved in this, in this plan of action, so to speak. So you really do have to have a plan in place because everybody needs to be on the same page.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. And you have to do it. The thing that really that I had to focus on was, yes, I had done this at work. And, yes, I thought if I had the plan all created, it would be great. But I really had to be very sensitive to people's emotions and their needs because this was my family we were talking about. I just couldn't walk away from, you know, a project like at work. So I really, this really hit me hard, the emotional side of it. There were a lot of times when I had to kind of pull myself back a little bit and just say, okay, you want to think about what you're saying and doing here.
Yeah, and that's what I love about sort of what you have consistently throughout the chapters of your book at the very end, which is, correct me if I'm saying this, but you say stop and take a breather or stop and, you know, let's take a step back and review the situation before we, you know, move forward.
Yeah, if I put that at the end of each chapter, because I think even though the chapters are short, like you say, I present a lot of information, and you really have to think about it in terms of your own family and your situation.
Right.
So I put a little section at the end of each chapter, and it says, stop, time for a sanity check.
Right, right. Stop, time for a sanity check, exactly. Now, let's talk a little bit about assess, because I think a lot of people, when they're in this crisis situation, don't do it the right way, or they may bypass critical aspects of what you talk about when you're assessing the situation. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that? And, you know, you share also a poignant, I think, aha moment with your own mother about her negative thinking and, you know, what she's going through in this process. And I think that little story really kind of captures the essence of how families can approach this the right way. Do you mind sharing that?
Right. I sure will. Well, I'll start off with the assess, if I may. I really think this is almost, for me, the most important component. If you don't get this right, you're going to really be in trouble. In assess, you really need to, I say, first of all, slow down. It's not in our nature as normal adults to really slow down, and my mother needed me to slow down. And in fact, I found some little techniques where I would put my hands in my lap, and it would make me be quiet. So slow down. Listen, observe. I was very careful to observe the way she moved and the conversation she had, so assessing is just hugely important. Now, as far as I want to share two different little situations. You referred to one, but there was one situation that happened as I walked through my mom's house for the first time when I arrived, and I walked through and I could not believe the state of the house, and it should have really been overwhelming. I mean, I got to the point where I couldn't figure out where she slept because there was so much stuff on all the beds and so forth, but I sat down on a step, and it's like my head cleared, and I just had one thought, and it was that no one should ever have to live like this. And it was like at that moment, my whole focus turned towards the thing I wanted for my mother was for her to have quality of life. And I had no idea how long she had left. But I thought, however long it is, I want to see she never lives like this again. So my brother and I really understood from that point forward that it was quality of life that we wanted for our mother. And that's what helped us learn to work together.
Sure.
Have that common goal. And the other thing that you referenced was a situation. I had had these conversations with my mother for years. She would go on and on about, you know, so-and-so lives in an expensive villa, so-and-so dresses a way I can never dress, and those kind of conversations. And I really would turn a deaf ear to it until she moved on. But through this whole kind of self-awareness of trying to be more empathetic to my mother and really trying to understand it from her point of view, one day it just clicked. I thought, this is not my mother just complaining over and over again. This is about a really important issue to my mother. And I realized my mother had been dealing with low self-esteem all of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I understood, and I wasn't annoyed, you know, anymore. And I understood where she was coming from. So just understanding that was a huge step forward to me in really, you know, acknowledging her real deep needs.
Right, and that touched me because I think a lot of us assume or take on sort of the old role of being the child with the parent and all sort of whatever, you know, aspects of that relationship, you know, existed in the past. And I think what was so touching about that story was that you were able to really shift and see her from a different point of view and a point of view of empathy. And it's hard for us sometimes, particularly if, you know, I'm not saying in your case, but perhaps if a child has some, you know, old resentments towards their parents or, you know, things of that nature. So it's just it's just really a very touching story, and I think one that will help a lot of people in realizing that a shift in thinking about their own parents needs to happen.
Yeah, I could just feel that was a huge shift for me. So that is so true, Susan. It is.
Yeah. Now, in the chapter about assessing yourself. Now, you talk about assessing your parent situation, but then you talk about assessing yourself, your own needs. You're one of the few authors that actually discusses the workplace in the books that I've read, and there are real sensitivities around revealing your situation at work. But it's fortunate that you do mention some resources are available. Can you tell us about this, about the issues of, you know, revealing, you know, your situation as a caregiver?
Sure. I actually came across this when I was an IT manager, and one of my employees cared for her mother through a 5-year battle with cancer. And she was also raising 2 teenagers at the time, and we were working on a very intense project with long hours. And I will never forget the day she came to my office, and I suddenly realized that she had hit crisis and that her mother needed help and she needed help. And through our employee assistance program, this person and I were able to talk to a professional, and then we were able to connect with hospice and get them both the help they needed. But I just thought at that point in time, I thought I was there for her, but what if she had had a different manager? She was suffering alone. So I think it's really important for employees and workplaces to be proactive in reaching out to employees. And I do know that some are starting to offer elder care advisory services through their employee assistance programs. So for anyone listening who's struggling with their job and caring for an elderly person, I would go to your HR department and just see what they do in terms of help with elder care issues.
Yeah, I think many people will be surprised that there actually are some resources in our own HR departments to help people going through caregiving. I think there's a lot of progress still to be made, but much sort of in the same vein for parents of young children.
Right, and you are aware of the MetLife study of working caregivers that was published recently. Caregivers who are also employees are more likely to have depression, diabetes, heart disease, and the cost is an additional 8% in healthcare costs to the employer.
Right.
And it's a huge amount of money. It's just not in terms of money, but it's those workers you do not want to lose, good employees.
No, absolutely not. And I think that, you know, definitely more needs to be done in that area, but I think the numbers keep growing in terms of people who are being affected by caregiving and working full time. So let's see what the future holds.
Right. And I would say reach out to your HR department, and if there's not an effort, then try to get a group of people to approach them and say, there's this need, and we want you to address it.
Yeah. Dale, let's talk about the next chapter where you talk about discussing as a family. And what do you tell families that say, oh, no way, my siblings and I can never agree on what to do? I think this is a very interesting and critical chapter, particularly if you have a contentious family.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think, you know, unfortunately, it sometimes is the norm. My brother and I had always had very different perspectives in terms of, what my mother needed and her situation and everything. Mm-hmm. And we had not ever really come together and talked about it. So this was a huge time of change for us. But the way I thought about it, first of all, we knew we had come together and we had this goal that for my mother, that we wanted her to have good quality of life. So we had that to share. I also thought about, from my own perspective, what I wanted for my own children. I wanted my own children to have mutual respect for each other and to be friends and to be able to get along and support each other. And I thought, you know, I know my mother wants that for my brother and me as well. And that was really that kind of thought process is really what helped me approach my brother and really communicate with him differently than we ever had before.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful that you were able to shift your way of thinking as well on that. I'll share something from my family, and that is I'll never forget when my grandmother was actually in the hospital and she had had a stroke, and my aunt and uncle started arguing in front of her, and my grandmother actually started to cry. It was one of the saddest things, and this reading this chapter made me think of that moment in history. It happened a while back, but it's absolutely the last thing that they want. They want you to get along, and they want you to figure it out, and, you know, we're all adults. So thank you for this chapter and giving people tips on how to do that. Now, you talk about the family meeting, which I think is brilliant. I'm so glad you elaborate on the specifics of setting up a meeting. It seems so easy, but it involves planning and specific tactics to really be very successful. So can you share some of those tips on a successful family meeting?
Sure. I give a lot of attention to planning the meeting, as you say. And that planning is so important, because if you plan properly, you're going to set that meeting up for success. You're going to get people in the right frame of mind, and they're not going to come and be defensive. So you'll have a much better chance of a successful meeting. You need to make sure that everyone's informed. Now, in the earlier chapters in my book, I talk about reaching out to your brothers, your sisters, spouses of your parent, family members, anyone who's really integral to their care and their well-being. So by the time you get to the meeting, people who come to that meeting should be very well informed. It's really important to decide who's going to facilitate it. And if you think there's going to be any kind of difficult dynamics going on, it would really be good for you to choose a professional facilitator. And there are two types of facilitators in elder care now. There's a geriatric care manager and also an elder mediator. So I would say, you know, my book talks a little bit about how to find out more about those two professionals, but have a professional facilitator. I talk about creating an agenda and a list of guidelines for as you're meeting. What are your guidelines? One guideline definitely should be that when someone is talking, they are not interrupted. So those kinds of things. And you can certainly build on those guidelines when you first meet. And so pre-planning is really, really important.
I couldn't agree more. Now, why don't we move on, because I think we have 6 minutes left.
Okay.
In the plan, in the section called The Plan, mm-hmm. you really help direct caregivers who are in a crisis situation, and you provide a wonderful range of very helpful resources. Can you give some examples of what these resources are?
Sure. The first thing I start off with are my two go-to resources. And the first one many of you may have heard about is eldercare.gov. You put in a zip code, and it connects you with the Area Agency on Aging, so you have their contact information. And they are a wonderful resource that I did not find out about until several months ago. Most of them offer a hotline where you can call in, and many of them really offer a holistic approach. So if you call with one question, they'll try to understand what your overall needs are. So they're a wonderful resource. And then the other resource that I turned to pretty quickly was a wonderful book that I use as a reference book. It's called How to Care for Aging Parents by Virginia Morris. So they were my top two resources. Then I provide information on associations and how to find different experts, financial assistance, support resources for caregivers.
It's really I really appreciate your covering a wide, you know, and diverse range of resources, because there's so many different aspects to this. And why don't we move on to the final stage, which is the transition, the T in the ADAPT, correct?
Yes, indeed.
Yes. So what are some of the specific things that families can do to make it easier on their parents in this transition process? Because, I mean, particularly in your situation, if your mother is moving from her home to a new facility or retirement community, I mean, that involves a tremendous amount of emotional transition, I would assume.
It was hugely emotional. We got to the last week. My husband joined me, and my brother and his wife were there. And there was one day that we thought everything was just moving along fine, and my mother sat down on her bed and just broke down and was just all over the place emotionally. And we just had to kind of calm her down and say, "Mom, we've all chosen this process. You chose this, you know, to sell your home and to move into your retirement community, and we know it's hard, but we just had to be very empathetic to her and understanding." And I say it's really important to allow enough time so your parent doesn't feel rushed. And I know you can't allow enough time in the world so they don't feel totally rushed, but you really have to think about your pacing. And to think ahead, are there any things you can do the day of to really make that move and that change less stressful? We had, my brother stayed with my mother the entire time. He was the person, if she needed anything, he could contact any of the other ones of us who are doing the move and all, but
right.
He was there with my mother. I think it's so important to have a person to be right there.
Sure.
To be like their advocate that day. Yeah.
That's wonderful that he, you know, I remember another guest of ours did the same thing with her mother. She actually stayed overnight and just made sure that all her needs, particularly in the beginning, were being met. And I love the quote that you use in your book about choose happiness, why not? Tell us what you mean by that and how you use that in reference to your mother.
Yeah, well, after the transition, of course, it's not done. The person has to adjust, and it's a huge adjustment. My mother was grieving for her home and for the life she knew, and it was really hard, and there were some really sad times. So often when we would talk and she'd be sad, I'd always kind of try to gently guide her to things that made her happy. There were things that she loved at her new retirement community, and I'd say, "Mom, tell me about, you know, that music program you went to that you loved the one last week so much. Tell me about this one." So I would try to gently guide her toward happier topics, because that can really change your whole mood when you start moving towards a positive frame of mind versus being sad.
Dale, you know, you are such a thoughtful, and I mean, thank you so much for sharing the method, but also interweaving your own personal experience so that we can better understand how the ADAPT method works. Why don't we move to the end? I know I still had a couple of other questions I wanted to ask you, but we've run out of time. What do you hope readers will take away from this book?
Well, the first thing and the biggest thing is to I'm hoping that my process will help them and they can use it as a guide when they're helping their parents. But I really want to also get across the message that we need to look inward when we're helping our parents, understand their values and their needs and their goals. But at the same time, we need to look outward for support and balance in our overall lives. So it's really just looking at the whole person and the whole process.
You're absolutely right. I can't agree with you more. And thank you so much, Dale, for joining us today. Let me tell the audience about your book. You can purchase Dale's new book, Transitioning Your Aging Parent, A Five-Step Guide Through Crisis and Change, on her website. Her website is www.transitionagingparents.com. And there is a 10% discount available through August 31st. Is that correct, Dale?
That's correct, and I just did a new blog post right before our show. If you just go right to my website, my first blog post will give you the code and the information to get the 10% discount.
Oh, terrific. So if you are listening live, that is tomorrow. August 31st is tomorrow, so be sure to get your book now. So, Dale, thank you so much for joining us. I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in. Join us next time on Wednesday, September 8th at 2 p.m. Eastern, when Dr. Gordon Atherley, our very first guest physician, will join us to discuss his work as an activist on behalf of caregivers. The show will be held on Wednesday as opposed to our normal Mondays because of the Labor Day holiday. To learn more about eCare Diaries' free online calendar and management tools, visit www.ecarediary.com. We are also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and my Twitter address is ecarediarysusan. Dale, do you have a Twitter address?
I do. It's a little bit odd. It's D-A-C-C-A-R-T-E.
Okay. Do you want to repeat that one more time so that we can get followers to follow you on Twitter?
It's D-A-C-C-A-R-T-E.
Wonderful. Thank you again, Dale, and thank you, audience. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.